Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome once again to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. Thanks to Grassland Agro for helping us make this show happen. Plenty of storms to keep the weather forecasters busy this week. Thankfully, I'm joined by Adam Woods, Darren Carty and Aidan Brennan again to chat all that's happening on farms. First up is the quickfire round. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 0868-366-6465. Adam, I'll come to you first on the quickfire. John has written me in a big letter here. I'll read it out as best I can. Hope you are well. I started calving suckers in spring 2022, calved 17 heifers. New entrance to suckers. In 2023, I sold the five poorest cows because the terms and conditions stated if you had no reference number between 2016 and 2021, you could select your reference number, but then you had to calve down half this number. I joined SCEP in May 15th and selected my reference number up to 27. I calved down 14 in 23 and had two stillbirths, and I had nine maiden heifers ready for the bull. In August, I got a letter to say my reference number was 14 because I only calved down 14 and new entrants had to calve down the full reference number in year one. I found out since that they changed the rules on May the 11th for new entrants. This is currently being appealed by myself. I'm just wondering, is there many new suckler farmers in this position? And because there are so many after pulling out of SCEP, I think could or would the minister allow these new entrants their full reference, as it would probably be a lot less than the cost, a lot less than the numbers that have pulled out. I would support the suckler farmers of the future. It would. Hey, Adam, new entrant. Looks like he's a reference number issue. Talk to me. Any word on that?
Any word on that?
Yeah, look, it's very frustrating, Jack. I suppose young fella wanting to pursue a career in suckler farming and look at no fault of his own. He's only at the start, so he's putting down where he needs to get to, which is 27, and he thought if he calved 50%, that was the talk of the time. Obviously, you get your full payment, and they're saying no. And the fact that that was changed on the 11th of May is a little bit disingenuous from the Department of Agriculture. I think that farmer's a really good case to say, look, at he read the conditions.
Are we sure it was changed on the May?
Yeah, I'm not. I don't have. I know Darren maybe was looking there for it in terms of the terms and conditions before the 11th. Okay. I don't have a copy of them, but so we're not too sure. But, okay. But obviously, we're taking that farmer's word at that in terms of being changed for new entrants. We would hope that appeal will immediately get back up to 27. If he can demonstrate that he's going to calve 27, I think this year he'd be in a good place.
Yeah.
Nice one. We'll keep an eye on it. Hi, I have a quick fire question for Adam. My reference is 50 cows, but unfortunately I broke my pelvis recently and I'm not sure what I'm doing in relation to calving. If I calve 25 and have 25 eligible maiden heifers, do I still receive full payment for 50 cows? So health issue, Adam, man in trouble. And he's looking at maybe kind of cutting down the cows a bit.
Yeah, obviously, sorry to hear him with the pelvis broke. But he's okay. If they have 50% of the reference number of cows, or I'd always say maybe to people just a little, maybe another one or two, maybe after that, just to be sure. But yeah, half the cows. And they can actually, they can actually, if that farmer was going to reduce cows into the future, they can actually change their reference number for 2024. A text message went out the other day with that to all farmers, skip participants. They can amend down by 20% the reference number, so he wouldn't he'd have to he'd get paid less, but he could cab less if that was a situation he wanted to head to.
Okay, nice one. There's a bit of an option there. Text will come in here. Hello, Timmy. Timmy here. Okay, so I've taken over farming from my father in 23, herd number transfer and land. I sent cattle to the factory last week and they wrote out a check to my father. Poor devil, he didn't get the check. Cattle in my herd number. Herd number stayed the same, just change of name. Should factories pay the name on the herd number, not the name in their system? Adam, we had something like this in the last couple of weeks. Talk to me here now. This young farmer.
We had, yeah, and I chased up the other one, or been speaking to that farmer, and look, there's a whole myriad of issues in that other issue. We'll cover it at another date, but it's not just a simple case of maybe a check going out in a different name. But this is, and this is the department, or this is the factory system, I'd say, just wasn't changed or wasn't updated. It's simple enough, to be honest. If you just go back into the factory or whoever it was, they'll probably change the name on it and initial it, and that'll be okay, and just let them know that has to change. But it should happen probably automatically from the department's records, but it's just something that's slipped through the net, I'd say, there in the factory.
There's a big row going on there at home at the kitchen table now. You can see, you can hear it from here. Great show. Cow calf 4 days and calf still won't suck. Was a hard jacking and a big Charlie calf, tender on the feet. Anything that can help. Adam, talk to me. You've lots of experience in this.
I probably look at the consulting the vet anyway, number one, just to make sure that you're covering with painkillers there or anything else that needs to be covered if there was a hard calf, and vets have got very positive towards the use of those painkillers. The other one is the Madigan squeeze, and if it's on YouTube, and we had Jim Strain, a farmer rights, tried this a couple of years ago. I remember him telling me a calf wouldn't suck for 3 or 4 days, and you tie a rope, we'll say around the calf's neck and back, round its chest and round, we'll say, just in front of its back legs, and you pull that rope pretty tight, and it sort of simulates the calving process, and it's supposed to release maybe endorphins and hormones to stimulate a calf, we'll say, being born, and to stimulate it to suck straight after that rope maneuver or whatever. So if you YouTube that, it'll show you how to do it, and it's definitely worth a try.
Okay, nice one. Fair play. Thanks, Adam. Back to you in a minute. Darren, that same young farmer there that didn't get the check, he's a question here on he didn't get his BIS payment either, or he didn't get any yet anyway in terms of a BIS payment. So the poor old devil, there's a right row going on now at the kitchen table. So I've contacted the department multiple times on the matter, and all I'm getting is it's in the system and being worked on, but no timeline as to when I get paid. The issue is I applied for my BIS with a reference number as the herd number had not transferred. I applied for the herd number transfer in March, and it was July before it was transferred. I'm a dry stock farmer, and the BIS payment is the farm's income for the year. They're like a lot of other dry stock farmers dependent on the BIS payment. Any idea why the system is so slow, or how could it be improved? Darren, big issue for this farmer.
Yeah, sure, Jack. And we've said it before. This say a lot of payments being made, but if you're the one that hasn't, it is a big issue. Just the exact query and the system being slow. One of the things that contributed, I suppose, to a bit of delay this year was the new young farmer scheme. I say the complementary income support for young farmers, the higher payment of what was said at the time was 170 euros a hectare. I think it's now 150 something. That brought in an awful lot more applications, Jack, an awful lot more applications into, say, BIS, into for our numbers to be transferred. And we are hearing cases of payments not being made. Unfortunately, I don't have a lot more, Jack, only that either the farmer themselves or their advisor keeps on to the department and see can they get any update and see if they can push it through that way.
Okay. Difficult one, and as that as we said before, when you get nothing at all, I mean, you talked before, Darren, to us about, like, I mean, surely you could get 70% and then kind of maybe there should be something like that. It is difficult when you get absolutely zero. Question for Darren. I have a bunch of colyos, 80 to 85 kilos with flesh, and then the mart seems to be way ahead of what's been paid in the factory. What's your advice and what are they worth? Thanks, love the show. Darren, is the mart the place to go with them yos?
Yeah, this week, Jack, definitely. Now, the factories have moved on a small bit in price, but, like, they're still not at the races. another 10 cent, like the main plants are quoting 283 euros a kilo. Like the way I summed it up this week is that if you had heavier yaws and they were just killing for argument's sake max weight of 45 kilo carcass, 3 euros a kilo, 135 euros, that type of yaw is selling for a lot more than our trade. So I definitely be the listener or the viewer is definitely thinking right in this way up to our trade. I think that's the strongest at the moment. And even if there is some heavy yaws in it, and it doesn't suit to bring them all to the mart, even grade them off, you'll definitely get paid for bringing the type of yaw that is wanted at the moment in the mart.
Nice one. Hi all, any update on if Acres payments is still on target for February for co-op farmers? Any update on that, Darren?
Yeah, I presume it is, Jack. We haven't heard anything to say any different, so we're, I suppose, maybe holding the minister to account that we'll be this week as we come closer to the first bridge to make sure that is the case, but there's nothing that we've heard to suggest otherwise at the moment.
Okay, quick question, and sorry if it was covered a few weeks ago. Still no payment for lease entitlements despite entitlement transfer being accepted months ago. No update from the department. What is holding it up? Would anyone know? Is there something on this in the last day or two, Darren?
Yeah, I think what came up in the last few days, Jack, was something slightly different. And the text messages came out telling farmers that the entitlements that were leased out for 2023 were reverting back. And that in itself is, I suppose, adds to the whole thing around the delay here or delay in situation that entitlements are reverting back to people and there isn't payments. We have a good few questions on that, Jack, a good few queries. It's something that we have a question put to the Department of Agriculture for next week. We had a big table on payments this week, so we've gone back to the department to see around areas not paid or can they shed any light on it. So hopefully for this listener, we might have some bit of an update or news on it for this week coming.
Okay. Thanks, Darren. Back to you in a minute. Aidan, just one quick fire in for you. It's on this whole piece around calf sales. Hi, lads. Is there any talk of increasing the days for calves to be sold without a TB test? Lads who have the accommodation can afford to hold on to them until they are weaned, maybe 70 days. I have a more saleable calf. Two, better able for long transport animal welfare. Three, less influx in marts at peak times. It worked during COVID times, fine. I think the department needs to look at it. Thanks. And Aidan, any chat on that? Like this farmer's making a case for it that there's benefits other than kind of, you know, outside of, there's a couple of different benefits to it. Like.
Yeah, Jack, look, there's a good few farmers talking about it, you know, and saying why are we having to shift calves, you know, under the 42 days when they prefer to keep them a bit longer, have a bigger calf, a stronger calf, all the rest. I think they're very valid. Now, one of the lads might know more, but I remember at the time it ended after COVID, the reasons given by the department were to do with EU law around TB testing and stuff. Maybe Darren knows more about it than I do, but it's that was my understanding that, you know, they're complying with EU law and that. But I think if there's a will there, Jack, it can be changed. Yeah. You know, if it's an animal welfare issue, as well, the likelihood of those calves having TB is minuscule, you know, but it's possible, but it's a small risk.
Yeah, Darren, any more on that? No.
Yeah, no, Aidan is right. I think it goes back to rules that, say, Ireland has adopted on calf movements. But as Aidan said, like, it worked very successfully at the time, and you'd imagine it would help in the overall scheme of things in calf movements.
Yeah. Okay, nice one. Excellent. Chat to you in a minute. Adam, I'll come to you first in terms of, I'll start off with the factory price leagues. I mean, first up, just for people in terms of getting their first kind of peep at this or hearing the first peep about it, in terms of how they're made up, Adam, just give us a kind of the context in terms of the prices and where they come from and look, are they real prices and can you stand over them, all that kind of piece. You know?
Yeah. So this is actual Department of Agriculture reported prices, Jack, and that the Department of Agriculture publish every week, and they're in the back of the Farmer's Journal every week. And a lot of farmers use those pages to see, we'll say, where price is going and what price was paid for the previous week. So they're actual prices. They're not farmers ring us up and say, well, I got 5.40 for heifers this week, or I got 5.20. This is actual reported figures from the Department of Agriculture. It's based on average carcass weights. And sort of we do the analysis then based on the highest and lowest factories that reported for at least 10 weeks in 2023. So huge job of work here by Phelim O'Neill, looking at all these figures, collating every week together and then analysing it and sorting it. and seeing, you know, what factories paid most and what factories paid the least. The big one here is transparency, Jack. Within the beef industry, we don't have good transparency there as regards price and mechanisms between factories. And this is one of the only times of the year where we're able to sort of compare factories on a yearly basis based on the price reporting to the Department of Agriculture.
Yeah, and it's you know, you talk about those tables, Adam, and I know, as you say, a lot of farmers are up to speed on what they actually are, but a lot of farmers, I find when I talk, a lot of farmers don't realise that their actual price is paid, you know, because I mean, they obviously have agents coming into the sheds, and they say, the farmer goes, the journal said we should be getting 550 for this type of cattle, like, and then the agent goes, sure, what would the journal know? They're not buying any cattle, you know, the kind of away, like, I mean, but like these tables on a weekly basis are actual prices paid for different classes of stock, you know, no matter what factory you want to supply.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we look at, you know, cows, we said we've led with cows, obviously, on the front of the paper this week in terms of a €225 spread between the worst factory and the best factory. But like C&J Meats, that they're a well-known company in the north of Ireland. They have a processing facility up in Lifford and they have operations in the north as well. But very, very fit around Mart Rings, Jack, all during 2023 buying cows. And they're coming in at the top there for a U equals 3 equals cow, the type of a cow that company is buying at 505, you know, for almost €506 a kilo. And we take the worst factory as Keepike and Clonee at 435. So it's a very, very simple one that to look at in terms of look at the spread there. If I sold a U equals 3 equals cow to C&J Meats, I'm up, you know, 70 cent a kilo based on the average pricing of all of 2023. So it's very, very simple when you study the table. I know there's a lot of figures and a lot of tables on the fourth this week, but it takes a bit of sitting down just and analysing where, and it's always interesting to see too where if I've been selling down to Clonus or whatever, where they're ranking, and I'm sure there's lots of calls take place this week saying, well,
yeah. So yeah, and of course, Adam, the piece then is that there's transport costs. Like, let's say that farmer wants to move the cattle to wherever. Like, I mean, there is a transport cost involved that you have to kind of weigh up. You know what I mean? As opposed to maybe taking them in the road 5 or 10 miles, which a lot, like call a spade, a lot of farmers, that's what they'll do irrespective of what prices are, you know, the kind of a way, like, but...
It is, Jack, but it's also streamlined now in terms of, you know, where like we killed the tribe cattle in Donegal meets, and you know, the price to get to Donegal isn't much more than to get down to a local factory, maybe down to Care or Watergrass Hill or wherever else, you know, in terms of, because those guys are working on backloads, or cows being bought down in Kerry or whatever, and they're going back up the road, or they're coming down the road in terms of, you know, it's like a logistics company, these lads that are hauling cattle. It's not that they're going off on one load and they have to cover the whole price on that load of cattle. They're measuring it up with a load back or whatever. So it's working out. It's not that much more expensive to go to different factories, but there's different allegiances, I suppose, and maybe there's a different bit of loyalty there among farmers too. Yes. In terms of, well, if I deal with the same person all the time, maybe they'll look after me when
the bullock goes down and is hurt and this, that, and the other. That's what I hear. Like, yeah.
It's important to price around and see. You see the spread here, 225 on a cow. Yeah. That's a huge, and like it's up there as well with bullocks and heifers. It's 180, you know, on an 03 bullock. It's back down to 71 on a U equals heifer. But it's definitely it's real food for thought this week in terms of looking at those figures.
Yeah, nice one. Look at lots in that, lots more, and as you say, lots to distill and understand in those tables. Adam, you were at the Dairy Beef meeting in Portlaoise last week. This was the launch of the 10-point plan in terms of where the piece needs to move to.
Yeah, look, it's good to see it, Jack, I suppose, in terms of coming together. I suppose Chagas would have been, you know, have a lot of these plans in place as regards sex semen, as regards animal health, as regards, you know, factory, you know, farmer relationships. And all this has come together into a 10-point plan. I wrote a little bit about it this week on the calf focus pages, and you just, I suppose, sitting in Portlaoise and looking at all these people being very positive about dairy beef, you got to think, maybe is this 10 years late? Look, we knew quotas were going back in 15. And in fairness to Liam Hurley, he held his hands up in the opening address saying that, you know, very good at processing milk from the extra cows. We haven't been as good at maybe paying attention to calves and making sure that they're, you know, getting some value added to them as well. So this plan, I suppose, is to, you know, proof the future for dairy beef in terms of where we're going. High CBV cows, a lot of talk about CBV, and we've a good bit in the calf focus this week about CBVs as well. And look at the initial data coming through from this is very, very positive. In terms of ICBF, they've ranked that in terms of Angus males, right, the top one, we'll say the top 10% versus the bottom 10% in 100,000 Angus males that were slaughtered in 2023. Difference in the calf price there was €58. The difference in the slaughter price was €326. So there's a massive, you know, gain there to be had by just paying an extra €58 for the top CBV calf. Well, actually, when it came to slaughtering, it was up 326. So CBV seems to have a lot of confidence within the industry, and even within ICBF and within other people are saying it's yeah, one to follow.
And of course, that's the big change this year, Adam, on the mark boards with the genotyping piece. That number, that CBV number, will be there for everyone to see. So what's a good CBV number, like, you know what I mean? If you were going buying Angus or Herefords, what kind of CBV?
I'd be saying, you know, maybe you're looking at 100, you know, for Angus, we'll say Angus bulls or heifers, you might say very simply, you know, the top 20% of CBVs and Angus males or females will be 100. Now, I'm sure there'll be people who'll come in next week and say, what is he going? That's the top 20%. We're not going to get there already. But I'd be saying if any man or woman buying calves, aim for 100.
Right. And so then the decision then for the farmer around the ring, Adam, is if the CBV of a calf comes in at 60 or 50 or whatever, and it's costing €100 less, maybe it's worth a shot.
Exactly. No, that's the other side of it. Aidan has said that before, in terms of it's about the value proposition there, and in terms of you can buy Frisian bulls cheap enough, well then there may be a margin there. But and what I wouldn't like to see happening is a high CBV calf, you blow the budget altogether. If an Angus bull calf comes in at €100, that you go to 400 on him because he has a high CBV. I'd be more thinking that you'll take that the beef farmer will take them off the dairy farmers' hands because they're a high CBV, if you know what I mean.
but again, Adam, I got it a good bit in Dungarvan there the other night, in terms of at the moment, because there's a demand on stock, whether they're bulls, bullocks, heifers, cows, lame, not lame, they're taking everything. The factories are taking everything. You know, the kind of market demand for beef, you know, it varies depending on supply and demand to a large extent. Like.
It does. That's one of the most frustrating factors of all, Jack. You know, bulls at the moment, I was talking to a guy the other day, he killed bulls at 480 kilos and there wasn't one word about carcass spec, in spec, you know, whatever. Didn't matter. Just get them into the factory. When can you leave them in? And yet in a time when we've loads of cattle, then we will harp back to that in spec and 380 kilo carcass and penalising for heavyweight. So it's a hard one to make sense of all that. I suppose you stay the course and you try and stay in spec, you'll always get a market for that, I suppose. Outside that, you're always at a little bit more risk in terms of where you're going.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, speaking of inspect, like Board B, a conference last Friday, Adam, like there was, in fairness, like, you know, it was a great show in terms of, because look, analysing what happened in 2023 and having a peek forward into 2024 across all the meat sectors, not just beef, but across all the sectors.
Absolutely, and look at a pretty positive outlook for 2024 as well. If we look at across the EU, production down 1.6%. If we look at in terms of you know, the UK as well, Finnish numbers very, very tight, and that's our two main markets, you know, up on 90% or whatever of our markets is those two markets. A little bit concerning to see the fat scores twos, you know, coming up by 8% in 2023, probably a little bit to do with the poor grazing year and maybe cattle being killed off grass and maybe cattle being killed a little bit earlier on the run up to Christmas when demand was high as well. And look at over, you know, 65% of the cow kill now is P grade cows as well. I suppose the sign of the times of where we're going in terms of suckler cow numbers reducing and dairy cow numbers increasing, but all in all pretty positive. And then PGI, throw that in at the very end, and China. PGI, I'd be more positive about PGI than I would actually about China coming away from Friday's meeting. And you know, the fact that we're going to try into Italy there first, because Italy, Italian consumers are very, very well versed in PGIs because of a lot of them over there. And I suppose Board B, I think that's where we're going to pitch it first to see how we get on with that PGI grass fed beef.
Okay, so there might be actually at the end of, like, that was a lot of the talk, is this PGI piece going to deliver a premium price for farmers? Like, Board B are confident in Italy because, are more confident in Italy because the Italian and the buyers over there, they understand what PGI stands for to a large extent, right?
Yeah, exactly. And they're way ahead of us in beef price as well, which is important, yeah.
Oh, that's good. Excellent, yeah. Calves, Adam, talk to me. Like, there's a fairly big supplement. I'll obviously touch off with Aidan as well here. Like, but there's a lot of information now for a lot of business is going to be done over the next couple of weeks and months. Like.
Yeah, absolutely. The highlight for me, Jack, is Oisin Farrell in Longford. We would have featured Kevin Farrell on the pages before. He was a good beef and sheep farmer. He went over to the dark side a couple of years ago. His son did and started the milk cows just outside Ballymahan. But his son, Oisin, Kevin would have transferred some of this farm over to him, 60 acres. And a real breath of fresh air, this guy purchases in about 100 bullocks and heifers. Purchases them sort of February, March time as yearlings and brings them round to the following February, March and finishes them. He's an accountant by trade and he has every figure. We have three pages on him this week, but he has every figure dotted and teed to everything basically. And he's down to margins and he's looking at grades and what different grades are leaving. There's a couple of great tables this week. It's seldom you go onto a farm that they're so open with you in terms of what, and it's great to have it. It's absolutely brilliant. And it's Oisin makes it. It's not the article or anything. It's obviously the data that's behind it, but all the costs are there and the margins. I think it's €330 a head he's leaving without a land cost and without a labour cost, but positive to see a small style operator because the way we're going and with feedlots and factory aligned farmers finishing, you think that this is a big guy's game, but here it is, a small guy, 60 acres part time, and he's making a decent living. Has put up a shed, has to pay for the shed.
Jeepers, that's a nice one, Adam. And like, I mean, on a per hectare basis, like he's still doing good money if he has. Sure, he's matching the dark side there in terms of a payment for a profit per hectare if that's the case. Now you see, there you go, and you're knocking it every week, in fairness, it can be done. You heard it here. Excellent, Adam. Lots there, lots more in the paper. Thanks for that. Chat to you next week. Darren, I start with payments first before we get on to the sheep game. Like, you know, just in terms of you've the inside back page there in terms of the county by county breakdown of where all the money is going. And in fairness, like, it makes, you know, it gives a good feel for where the money is going per county and what's important. You know, is it ANCs that's important in Mayo? Where's the SCEP money gone, etc. All that kind of thing. It's really nice to look at. Like, it's very informative.
Very interesting, Jack. Like, and I've got that feedback from some people that even though you mightn't get, say, the detail down to the individual or average, say, payment of that, it's just knowing where the money is, what the schemes are. And like, for me, one of the standout things was the amount of money drawn down from farmers in Cork, like 183 million over the next, say, closest county, Galway, 143, Mayo, 100 million. Like, it just shows the level of agricultural activity that's taking place in Cork. Like, now, look, that's obviously underpinned by a very vibrant dairy sector. But, there's significant SCEP, significant sheep improvement scheme payments. Right. And it goes across. Like, I'd say if you were to look at activity in Cork as a per hectare, it must be very, very high.
It must be. Now, it is a big county, Darren, and it does have all the enterprises there. You know, it's one county that kind of has tillage, dairy, as you say, beef, sheep, and rough areas as well. Like, I mean, you go back to West Cork. Aidan was down there, and we'll chat to him about it a bit. But, like, you know, the land isn't hectic in parts of it. You know, the kind of way they have to work hard to make land of it, you know. So it is one county, as you say. But anyway, that's the breakdown, as you say, on the inside back. So it's for anyone that's interested, it's well worth a shout at that. The other piece, just I go to that, like, kind of coming off the back of Adam, is the Borbia piece, Darren. Like, I mean, Adam talked about the beef side of things and the cattle side of the things in terms of maybe price where it is and the positivity looking forward into 2024. What's the kind of lie of the land on the sheep side? Because that was also discussed by Borbia in Killeshee last week.
Yeah, and surprising, Jack, like any of the industry people that you were talking to were very surprised at Seamus McMinnum's, how would you call it, prediction of 40,000 extra lambs in the system. Now, we only talked 2 weeks ago around lamb supplies being tighter. So suppose I was joking with Seamus after we'd see who's right, whether there's an extra 40,000 sheep in the system or whether some lamb supplies for the first few months of the year are tighter. But if you leave that aside and say, look beyond that, and sort of get into the nitty-gritty of what Seamus was sort of, I suppose, maybe looking at, is that even if those 40,000 sheep do materialise, we're in a much better position than where we were this time last year. Prices, 60 to 70 cent a kilo ahead. And not just as of what's happening in Ireland, it's influencing that. Seamus put up some nice data that showed that towards the end of last year, particularly in Southern Europe, when drought sort of hit hard, a lot of farmers moved to finish lambs intensively. That finished those sheep at lighter rates. While it did temporarily increase production, it sort of ate forward into supplies coming on stream, and there's very good demand at the moment right across the EU for sheep meat, and that's what's driving price at the moment. And he can see that lasting definitely for the first half of the year, but longer term even as well. If you look at production trends, EU production was down 2.3% in 2023. It's forecast to decline by another 1.3% say this coming year. Globally, there's a bit more, I suppose, maybe life in China, even though it's not going to recover massively. It's expected to import 460,000 tons of sheep meat, so that will be up a couple of percent on the year previous. Sheep production in Australia is probably going to plateau after a significant increase, and New Zealand's lamb crop is also tightening. The only downside, Jack, and we've talked about this before, our only sort, I suppose, maybe warning signal, and this came more from Rupert Claxton from GEARA, who was talking, was around what's happening across the water in our neighbours in Britain. And like, if you look, we've spoke here before around consumption being under pressure, and that sort of trading down on replacing sheep meat. And by what I mean by that is, say, exports of UK sheep meat to the EU increased by 12% last year, and imports from New Zealand would have increased on the back of that. So it's getting back to a situation where we would have been maybe a decade ago. Now, not anywhere near the figures that the New Zealand is not going to turn around and fill, say, the UK or the European tariff-free quota that it did 10 years ago. But what is probably going to happen is you're going to see continued exports out of Britain to the EU being replaced in or backfilled by imports from New Zealand to a small extent. But the worry that Rupert Claxton brought up was around what's happening with Australia and Britain. So we've talked about on the sheep side that over the next 10 years, they can export 75,000 tons of sheep meat into Britain. Mm-hmm. A very high value market relative to where prices are in New Zealand and Australia at the moment. And we know from previous examples is once Australia gets into a market, they're very good at marketing. They're very good, I suppose, maybe at making inroads in those markets. And it's a worry that Rupert Claxton highlighted. And look, we've talked about that with bar funding and the failure to secure bar funding on that front. It definitely will have implications on the sheep side in the coming years.
And it'll be interesting to watch how that plays out as well, in terms of how that lamb gets across. Okay, so that's the look. I'll say in general it's positive, but there is that conditions, as you say, that potentially could change the game. It mightn't be this year, but it might be in the next couple of years. Getting back to basics, Darren, in terms of sheep, conferences, obviously big week this week in terms of the double conference, one in Athlone on Tuesday, wasn't it, and the other one in Donegal on Thursday. Talk to me about some of the kind of the key messages and kind of what has come out of that.
Yeah, two very good conferences, Jack. Sorry, same conference repeated, but very good conferences. Unfortunately, Tuesday's attendance was hampered by the orange weather warning. Look, there was nothing that could be done about that. That was, I suppose, maybe part and parcel of the weather. But it didn't. Anyone that attended got good messages out of it. The big take-home messages, Jack, like there was three main presentations where Tim Keady was talking about your nutrition. Now, listeners will be well familiar with Tim, but there was a couple of nice sort of messages around sheep being under more nutritional stress this year because of, say, the weather challenges, lower dry matter and grass, and just making sure and safeguarding that yours are in good condition heading into lambing. A few sort of, I suppose, key messages around it. We place an awful lot of emphasis around, say, the protein percentage in feed, looking at the cost of feeds, and this overall, that if you're to make sure you have a high energy, high protein feed, it's not going to break the bank in terms of the difference between buying a lower value feed and a higher value feed. But what it will do is have a massive influence on, say, how that yo performs and how lambs perform subsequently. So I think that was Tim's one, was main one, was getting feeding right. Martin Clark, from IFAC, there was a lot of interest, Jack, in this, just around, I suppose, maybe tips around succession, transfer on the family farm. Young farmer scheme, good to see. There's a lot of young people at the conferences as well. And there's a lot of interest around the young farmer scheme, how you maybe transfer farms. And I think that for anyone, the main message I got from it is that for anyone that's, number one is to have a will made. That the implications of not having a will made was massive. Like Martin put up, he said, everything is complicated. There's a higher risk of higher tax bills. There's a risk of the farm not actually being transferred to maybe who you liked, who the person who, say, the deceased person wants to go to. So that was the main one. And the next one then was, Jack, around just the whole thing around making sure the farming system is set up. For example, if you're the favorite niece or nephew, that's he had a good anecdote. So he had, and he said this, some of the times when they're dealing with say a young farmer, that they come in and they say, well, I was helping out my uncle Jimmy or Auntie Mary, and I brought them to dinner for the last 5 years, and that's, and he said he'd prefer them to see them bringing them a bag of nuts. He said that's something that you could tangibly show. But when he got beyond the joke, he said, look, have something tangible, that if you're working, whether it be in a farm partnership or whether it be working with your father, your mother, your aunt, your uncle, that have something tangible that shows that you have an input into that farm, whether it be a name on a bank account or whether it be that you're signing for meal in the local co-op, just something that shows, he said, it makes it an awful lot easier going forward. And then the last one was a panel I was involved in myself, Jack. It was what I thought was a good panel, in the three farmers given their experience of flock health problems, and then Seamus Fagan from the RVLs to say, come in along that. I won't go into that this week, Jack, if you don't mind, because we're going to put it on the sheet pages next week, and it's been something I think that it'd be nice to maybe talk around when we have a bit more time. Yeah. And then lastly, Minister for Agriculture, Charlie McConlogue, he was coy now on the new sheep scheme, gave a small bit more information. Look, at some parts we're hearing coming out farm organizations, other areas, but a couple of bits for farmers are what's new in it is that it's not going to be, the 8 euros isn't going to be joined into the sheep improvement scheme. It's going to be a standalone. So similar to the beef side, where you had SCEP and then you had the beef welfare scheme.
Okay.
Talking about four measures to include shearing, plunge dipping, clostridial vaccination, body condition score, and EOS, and you pick two out of those four measures. Still has a long way to go, Jack, but at least there is some positives coming on it, as there is work being done on it.
Okay, nice one. The other positive this week, Darren, is the sheep trade. Like, I mean, is it fair to say, is it up 10 cents again this week?
Yeah, up 10 cents. Factories tried hard now, Jack, at the start of the week to hold it. And look, that's, I suppose, their aim. We're not saying their aim is at the moment is to remain competitive. Farmers' aim, our aim, is to make sure that that we're providing the insight in that they get the maximum for their sheep. And thankfully, numbers are on the side of farmers this week, partly helped by weather. But even when weather got back, I suppose, to allow numbers to flow, there wasn't any big flush. Where you're looking at now is the quotes are knocking on the door of 7 euros a kilo. Kildare chilling 6.80 plus 10 cent is at 6.90. And you're like, it has put a baseline at 7 euros a kilo where anyone with significant numbers is setting their stall out. And that's generally what's being paid, 6.90, 7 euros. Start to the market, producer groups, maybe up to 7.05, 7.10. And then reports of agents and farmers handling very big numbers 7.15, 7.20, even a touch more with it. But I would, the bit of advice, Jack, I'd give is to, there has been a fair bit of upward movement in the last 3 weeks. We've gone 30 to 40 cent of a jump. And for anyone selling lambs, just keep abreast of trade, whether that be calling into the mart, watching online at our updates, is just to make sure you're getting the maximum amount. And as our quick fire showed, definitely on the O side, take a look at the mart trade to see whether the direct factory or mart route is more lucrative.
Yeah, 100%. Nice one. It's a moving market, so you need to keep on top of it, as you say, Darren. Excellent. Listen, we'll leave it at that, Darren. We'll chat again more next week on some of those issues, no doubt. Thank you. Aidan, on the, I suppose on your side of the house, I know you're between farm visits there at the moment, but in terms of, I'll start first with the VAT information, the update on the VAT information, because a lot of your guys are kind of implicated by this, Aidan, in terms of investment on farm, whether it's milking parlours or drafting gates or whatever, or collars or whatever, you know. So it's, there's some, you've got some information, Aidan, but maybe just not the full picture just yet.
Yeah, so to be fair to the IFA, they met the revenue commissioners during the week. So I suppose very clear in some areas. New milking machines, no problem. You get the VAT back on the machine. Feed bins, you get the VAT back in them. Drafting gates, get the VAT back in them. So there are three big ones, I suppose, that farmers were very curious around. Fencing gates, calving gates, anything a gate related is fine. Where there's still confusion, I suppose, is the other items. Well, sorry, there's clarity as well, I should say, on cow collars. So if you're buying an automatic, you know, heat detection system, you won't get the VAT back in the collars. Revenue are also on. Well, there's still, I suppose, the next things I'm going to say are based on IFA coming back with a number of different, suggestions that these should be why the VAT should be removing these, and that's bulk tanks. So there's a kickback from revenue on bulk tanks currently, and they're saying, you know, they basically at the moment it's a grey area. Additions to milking parlours is also a grey area, and computerized calf feeders is probably another grey area. So at the moment they're the ones that the debate is over, but they've clarified the other items, which is a positive.
Okay.
At least you know, those making big investments, they know now they're going to get the VAT back on those milking machines, but bulk tanks maybe not.
Okay, and so the department are obviously arguing that these bulk tanks can move or can be sold or traded in or whatever, and that's coming against their piece on the VAT. Is that, I presume that's where that's coming from.
So to be fair, it's not the department, Jack. It's revenue commissioners who are set. You know, they're a separate arm, I suppose, of the state.
Yeah.
I think to be honest, if it was up to the department, we'd get the VAT back in them all.
Yeah, sorry, no, I'm into the Department of Finance, but yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah. But even the department, even revenue, you know, they're a funny kind of an organization. Lobbying them isn't easy, you know, and even government ministers and stuff are supposed to be declaring any, lobbying to do. So it's not a straightforward thing. I suppose, to be fair, at least they met them. At least IFA were able to meet them. They got clarity in some items. And the door is open now for maybe further negotiations to take place on a few of these other ones. But it's unlikely, Jack, we're going to go back to where we were previously, where there was, you know, effectively every item that was bolted was, well, you're getting the VAT back on it.
Yeah.
That's probably not going to be the case now.
Yeah. I mean, and I suppose we should preface what we're having, Aidan, in terms of, we haven't seen any communications from the revenue commissioners on this, like we're going on personal communications and what we've heard. And yeah, I mean, because I heard some little bit of debate even on the feed bins. I think that if it had an auger, it was going to be okay, and this, that, and the other, and whatever. You know what I mean? Like, so, yeah, look at it. I mean, it's you know, you'd like to see the revenue commissioners bring clarity to this sooner rather than later, Aidan, wouldn't you? You know, for guys like that are making big investments, it's an important time of the year, like, for that.
It is, yeah. Because these are big investments, you know, and they're multiple investments as well. Now, just on, I suppose, on the calf feeder one, you know, if you're building a calf shed or making alterations to the calf shed, you will get the VAT back on that. But you may, as things stand, they're probably going to reject the VAT reclaim for the actual machine itself.
For the actual machine, for the calf feeder, right, yeah. Okay, and again, I yeah, exactly. Yeah, don't give up on it just because we were saying it. But you're right. But and again, the indications on the collars is not good. In terms of, you know, the heat detection collars or whatever you want to call them, like that, that they're, the Revenue Commissioner is saying no to, no to them at the moment as well. Yeah.
Not a fixed item.
Like, yeah, no. Excellent. Aidan, you were down in Dunmanway during the week. Is there much calving going on yet down West Cork? They'd be kind of early country, like, yeah.
They would be. Like, I drove into the car park and the daffodils were blooming, like, you know, and you know, there's no daffodils out yet, like, so it just goes to show the difference in temperature, you know, the further south you go.
Could be a variety thing now too, could it? No.
Say again?
Could be a variety thing too, could it?
Could be a variety thing. But either way, like, you know, there's a reason they calve a little bit earlier down there. To be fair, the group I was with now, there was a couple of amalgamation of about three groups together in a room and just had a meeting, you know, a chat conversation around where we are in terms of nitrates and I suppose the implications it has, like, and you know, of all the places in Ireland, Jack, West Cork is hardest hit. I mean, the percentage of carbury suppliers that are in derogation is extremely high.
60% plus, is it? I'd say, yeah. Is it 80? Yeah, 60 is what I had anyway. But anyway, yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, it is, yeah.
It's 60%, 66% really. So you're, they're definitely higher, like.
Yeah.
Look, the exact figure is unknown, and it depends on whether you're talking about meat pool or suppliers.
Correct.
But it's high, and like the scope for acquiring additional land in West Cork is very hard, like, because you know every acre is fully utilized. There's a big demand for land, even there always has been, Jack, because land is scarce. You know, and it's good quality land. You have a lot of smaller farmers who are looking to expand. So it's a really situation.
Yeah. So Aidan, if you were to call it now, after having that meeting with, let's say, 50 farmers, dairy farmers around you in the Carbery region, some of them now could be borderline dairy goal suppliers. But anyway, we'll say they're all in Carbery. What would you say to Jason Hawkins if you met him in terms of how his milk supply is going to go over the next couple of years, based on the discussion that you had around the table there?
Well, when we looked at the costings, Jack, of the mitigation options, I mean, they all went back to say, well, listen, culling cow numbers would be the better option, because the other mitigation strategies, whether that's acquiring additional land, they're very cleverly now, like, you know, they're clued in. There were the extra cost of the land was all going against the number of cows that they'd have to reduce by. Yeah. And they're saying to themselves, well, listen, I'd be better off reducing those cows. I'd lower my stocking rate. I wouldn't have to, you know, build an extra slurry storage. I'd be on track with, say, in terms of a more streamlined stocking rate for what land I have or what grass I'm going to grow in the future. So the mood right there was, Jack, cutting cow numbers. Now, look, it's a point in time. It's been a very difficult year. Our 2023 is a difficult year. We're not, you know, mentally farmers are still in 2023. They're not thinking yet in 24 terms because we haven't started calving yet, really. And if I went to them again in 2 months' time and we had a good spring, the mood would be much different. But it is. They are where they are now. And I mean, if I was Jason Hawkins, I'd be concerned for the supply into Carbery because, like, the farmers there will feel that they have no choice but to cut back.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing from you is they feel they'd be working for nothing for the extra cows that they'd have to keep to make it work for them. Like, yeah.
So it's even the cows that they have now, you know, their value there, if they need to, let's say, cut back by 20 cows or alternatively take on 20-30 acres, that 30 acres is all going against those 20 cows.
I hear you.
And I feel they're not making the profit from those 20 cows, particularly not last year, to pay for that extra land and to stay with the workload that they have and then to go away then and build extra slurry storage, because we know every farmer is going to need an extra 20% slurry storage based on the new chocolate rules that are coming down the road. I suppose, look, there was a lot of... I suppose the nuts and bolts of it was when we went through the figures, and I was doing them very broadly, they went back and they said that they're going to go home and do their own figures and their own farm in more depth. I mean, in fairness to them, they're all doing profit monitors, you know, so they have the information to hand and on what their own farm is doing and what the mitigation strategies are.
Is there grass around, Aidan? Yeah,
there is, I'd say, you know, and I mean, one of the challenges people have in the last week or so down in Munster and Leinster has been to find suitable fields that can take slurry, because there are some fields there that have covers of 1,100, 1,200 and more. I suppose it was such an early end to the season last year, Jack, there's going to be more grass around this year anyway.
Yeah.
the key thing now, I suppose, is to go out and do a walk, get your budget done, grass budget done for the spring, so you know where you are relative to where you should be on pasture base, and to make changes there, because there's no point in kind of bemoaning the fact that costs are high and feed costs are still high, relatively speaking. I know they've come down a lot, but they're still expensive.
Yes.
And I mean, the only way you're going to reduce the costs is by managing grass, really, then managing grass better than you have before. So it's something that has to be done.
Yeah. Much of the bag stuff out, Aidan, like, you know, you talked about the slurry, like, you know, and but, you know,
we're still not allowed spread fertilizer. the 27th is the first day, which is tomorrow. So you're, I haven't seen any manure spreaders in the road, to be honest. I mean, and look.
Yeah, you're not going to let down on it. That's fine, yeah. Yeah.
The mentality it's too early yet for most.
It's now the middle
of February, really. Jack. You know, things have moved on.
And in all seriousness, I would say there has been a real shift to that, Aidan, in terms of the, you know, that listen, we'll go with little and often, but we won't start till at least kind of the 15th or the 20th of February. Like, I would say, am I right in saying picking that up, that there's a bit of a shift towards that? Like,
I think so, yeah. And I mean, there's also the shift that they're saying if we had the slurry storage on hand, we probably wouldn't be spreading the slurry last week either. We'd have waited until the middle of February for that too. So, you know, there's the mindset is definitely shifting, but my fear is it only shifting among those farmers that are in irrigation, who probably have the least impact on water quality because of the requirements they have. Is the mindset shifting among farmers who aren't in irrigation or who aren't in dairying? You know, like, so there's for water quality to improve nationally in terms of agriculture's impact on water quality, everyone needs to move along in the same boat. I'm not saying they're not. I mean, beef farmers spread in the main spread a fraction of the fertilizer that dairy farmers spread, and you know they have to get the best response to that, so they spread it later on anyway. But
yeah,
as I said last week in the show, I think, you know, early fertilizer application is not really the big problem here. It's mid-winter applications of slurry from farmers that don't have enough storage is where a lot of the water quality problems are emerging from.
Yeah. Nice one. Aidan, calves, I talked to Adam about it and the dairy beef piece and the calf focus this week. So there's lots of calf information flowing around as per normal this time of the year when they're kind of just about to kick off in terms of 100,000 calves being born every week for a good few weeks now. The whole piece around genotyping and CBVs, again, we've talked about it last week. I suppose the first of the genotypes are probably coming back to some farms, Aidan, at the moment. Like, yeah.
There's still a bit humming and hawing as you know, how this is all going to work out among some, particularly the dairy farmers who aren't used to genotyping before. You know, the beef farmers are more familiar with it because they've been at it a while, you know, for those SCEP programs or BDGP or whatever. Yes. So there's an element of it there of the unknown. But I think, look, the key thing, as we said in the show before, is get the genotype samples off to the lab regularly. Register the calves as normal, and I mean, it's going to be a suck it and see kind of an approach for the first week or so, because look, there's no hassle holding on to calves at that stage anyway. If it takes a bit longer for the results to come back, what about it? You know, it's from the farmer's point of view, you know, there's no pressure on calves at that stage. Take your time, read the instructions correctly and how to take the sample and where to post it off and how often, follow the instructions then on registering calves. And then, you know, seeing when the results come back in terms of the blue card. So it's, you know, your early days, Jack, you have a bit of a chance. It's not as though we're starting this now, the last week of March, where you're up to your tonsils and calves, sheds are full, you need to remove, you know, sell calves ASAP. Most farmers will hang on to calves a little bit longer now.
And Aidan, when you say regularly, like, I mean, you're talking about sending away genotypes kind of 2 and 3 times a week, kind of. Is that what you're saying? If it's possible. Yeah. Yeah.
Times a week is probably the way to go. That means going in, getting, buying a bundle of stamps and having them ready to go, and whoever's going to town then drop in the sample.
Yes.
Into the post box. I think that's probably the best thing. Plenty of envelopes come in the tags, you know, don't be afraid to use them. And at least if the sample is gone, you know, and the other thing is to look at is ICBF have a new app, which is very useful for farmers to track where their genotypes are, how many are in the lab, how many they're waiting for results back on. So it's very useful in that regard.
Yeah. And sorry, maybe you don't know, I'm going to spring this on you in terms of registering calves. Did I see somewhere in terms of the department app or department agriculture.gov.ie in terms of registering calves? Can you still use that to register calves? Like, or was there something about that you have to switch to the ICBF app?
You can, as far as I know, but you can register on the computer, but you can't register on the app. So okay. The department have an app for registering calves. You can't use that, as far as I know, and you can't use the old white paper either, the white cards. So you have to be on, either do it digitally on the Ag Food website, or else use your herd software package. Do you know the herd watch, like watches?
Yeah. No,
that's fine. All these things, as you say, we'll hear of problems, I'm sure, in the next week or 2 weeks, of challenges and delays and holdups, and we might come back to.
You know, so there will be problems, and people will be, you know, have to do something different or whatever. But like, there's no pressure. You know, don't be panicking about it. If you've 10, 15 calves born, and you know, there's plenty of, you know, you have time to hold on to them. You have the space, and we learn about it in the next few weeks as we go along. So.
Brilliant. Our colleague Declan Collins has a report from the Grassland Conference that was there a couple of weeks ago in the Charleville Park Hotel. So that's on Dairy Pages. Aidan, 100%, we'll leave it at that, and we'll chat again next week. Right, folks, that's it for another week in terms of Farm Tech Talk, the Grassland. Thanks to Grassland Agro for helping us make this show happen. Thanks to you for watching, and thanks for listening. Thanks to our contributors, Adam, Darren and Aidan. Thanks again to you for the questions. Any more questions, WhatsApp 0868-366465. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.